Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
So we're, in fact, one of the getting into the most exciting chapters here. If you can say that word, every chapter is exciting. This is chapter 18. We're kind of developing Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet. He plays such a large role in Jewish history that from the few people, like if you ask a person, you know, who do you know a Navi? Everybody says Eliyahu HaNavi. So the he comes at a difficult moment in history where the people, the king is an idol worshiper, and the 10 tribes were sliding down into idol worship. And he's trying to pull the people back. He's trying to save the country. He's trying to bring the people back to Hashem. And that's kind of why whenever we talk about the Mashiach, there's the idea that Eliyahu will be the one that will come before the Mashiach, because he's the one that helps bring us back. And that's really what happens with the Mashiach, that, we've made mistakes and we've sinned, and Jews are spread out in different places and they've forgotten about Hashem. And Eliyahu is the one to announce that. Some people say it's in a certain way it's not like a punishment, but he became frustrated. We're going to see later that he felt that with everything that he had done, it wasn't effective. And so Hashem says to him, "You'll be the one that'll see that the people will come back." And other people learn that he's the alarm clock; he wakes us up. And so that's the that's part of the idea that he comes to every Pesach Seder and then he comes to every Bris. But the idea is developed here. The only thing I would say is that he's the one person in our history that we believe kind of became an angel. We don't usually have that concept that either you're human or there are spiritual things that exist. There's a spiritual world and there's humans, but there's not both. Some people learn that Eliyahu kind of became like an angel. So we don't know what that means. How does a person become? Does it mean that this quality of Eliyahu that he had, some people say that Hashem wanted that to be in all generations, that we need in different, it's not something that we need once in a lifetime, but every generation needs their Elijah. We need him there. I've met people that felt that they ran into Elijah during the war. Everybody, it's amazing how many people have this kind of story where they were crossing a border, or they were in a concentration camp, and at the strangest time somebody appeared and saved them, turned the other way. And sometimes that person was a Nazi, sometimes the person was a Pole, sometimes there's a story in the Six Day War. There was a story where a tank crew, where somebody, you know, they were about to turn to the left, and somebody appeared and waved them the other way, and there was one of those bombs buried underneath. And people have this story where somebody appears to them and saves the day, and then they look back and they say, "Where was that masked man?" And they never see him again. And there's a story about a community that they only had 9 people, and it was Erev Yom Kippur, and they found out somebody was sick or not there, and somebody walks in the shul and comes in and dies.
Old city.
What?
Somebody told us that story in the old city, in the old city.
It's happened in other in several places. In other words, it's a common story, believe it or not, where somebody appears and nobody knows where he came from or what he was doing. Or I told you my story I had, but that was
tell us again.
I don't think it was Elio, but I had in the summer when I was a teenager, I worked as a head counselor, and I came back. We went on a trip that I came back very late. It was like 12 or 1 at night, and we have during the 9 days we don't the week before Tisha B'Av, we try not to do laundry. Because the week of mourning, we try not to do things that take our mind off mourning. And so it was late at night, and I had to do my laundry. So I did my laundry. It was like 1 in the morning or 12 in the morning. And in the dorm, outside the laundry room, they had tetherball courts. And so while I was waiting for the dryer, I went out and started banging the tetherball, and I knocked the ball off the off the string. The string came down. And I didn't want to damage the string of the tether ball cord, so I climbed up the pole, you know, by myself to restring the ball, because I didn't want to damage the cord it belonged to. There was a summer camp on the campus. And I started lowering myself down, and I hadn't realized it, but the ball was, the cord was around my neck. And so as I was lowering myself down, I started strangling myself, and I just didn't have the energy at that point to go up or go down. It was a strange thing, and I was just like there. It was like 1:30 at night, and I was behind a laundry room in a dorm, and most people were sleeping at that time. And you know, your life goes in front of you, and you're thinking, "What's somebody? You know, what?" And somebody happened to walk by. I don't know why, you know, 1:30 in the morning, somebody would be behind the laundry room. And he said, "What are you doing there?" And I said, "Oh, you know, can you get me off?" And so the person came in a minute. I got myself out, and I was fine. And everything was fine. And I never met that person again. I don't know who he was. I don't know why he would have decided to go behind the laundry room at 1:30 in the morning. And I'm not worthy of Elio. But, you know, but people have stories, you know, where somebody appears in their life and they don't know who they are or who sent them, and they were just the right person at the right place and the right time. And you know, it was just a typical kid. I could be the rope would have broke if I, you know, but it was just at the time it was one of those scary moments. But I met Holocaust survivors and others that have an experience where they needed help and somebody comes to their rescue. And there's an idea that Hashem sometimes sends a messenger in the form of a human who could be Eliyahu, or Eliyahu could take a human form. And we have these legends, we have these stories, and they're real. In other words, people have, they have no explanation for why there was a person at that place at that time. And so we tend to say Hashem sends us, just like Eliyahu is the one that saves the day or comes to our rescue. We sometimes feel that Hashem does that, you know, whether it's really Eliyahu, it's not Eliyahu, but we hear these kind of stories. And so the beginning of who Eliyahu is started here. Is it okay if we close that door?
Sure, I didn't come with you then. Yeah. It is open, or
actually, sometimes the venting is better. But I was just hearing the noise.
So,
the back. A lot of people there today.
There's a lot of studying going on out there, and there's a lot of talk.
Yes. I never found out who that was in the dorm at 1:30, 2:00 in the morning. I was walking behind the back of the dorm in the laundry room, and it was a good thing he was there.
Yeah.
No, never told. I don't know. It was just one of those very strange, and you know, if I'd hurt myself, I was thinking somebody might have thought I did it, was trying to hurt myself or something.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is a person doing on the top of a flagpole? You know, it was just a very simple. I was just trying to hook the, you know, the ball up to the tether ball cord. And
was the camp so big that you wouldn't know everybody there?
It's possible, yes. There were people I didn't know, but there was no explanation why somebody would be walking back there, and you know, that. So what had happened was that we're in the middle of the famine, and Eliyahu had said that if the people give, that we say in the Shema that if we don't do the will of Hashem, if we abandon Hashem, so to speak, and follow the foreign gods, then he won't give rain to Eretz Israel. That's what it says. So Eliyahu had, if you remember, that Achav had said that that fellow had his son died, and there was a curse for the person that rebuilt Jericho, Yericho, and people were saying it was because he ignored the curse and he rebuilt the city. And Achav said, "I'm sure it's not the curse, because Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all people, said if you worship idols, you'll be cursed, and we're doing just fine." And so then Eliyahu was there, and Eliyahu said that no, it's the curse that if you sometimes the person thinks they're doing just fine, and really Hashem is just giving them a chance. Hashem doesn't get angry right away, but they're taking Hashem for granted. So here Hashem, Eliyahu brought the famine, and he goes into hiding. And he's up in the cave, and the ravens are bringing him the food. And meanwhile, the people don't do teshuvah. Nothing changes. But Hashem takes pity on them. And so let's see what happens. Chapter 18, verse 1. Vehi yamim rabim dvar Hashem ha'eliyo. It was after many days the word of Hashem came to Eliyo b'shana shlishis of the third year. That's a long time not to have rain. Leimer lechira el Achab. Go and you show yourself to Achab et namatzer al pnei adama. This is also a famous concept, and that is sometimes when somebody wrongs you, you feel they should come to you. We believe that if a person wants to do the right thing, be willing to go to them. When Korach fought with Moshe Rabbeinu, it says that Moshe went to Dothan and Aviram. Even though they were wrong, sometimes people get caught up and, well, they should come to me. Never wait for that. Never. In other words, we don't get caught up in ceremony. Like, the Jewish people need to be saved over here. If Eliyahu needs to go to Achav, then he'll go to Achav. So Hashem says, go to Achav, Etna, Matra, Alpanena, and let's find a way to get the rain going. We got to do something here. So verse 2, Eliyahu goes to appear to Achav, Rav Chazak B'Shomron. In the capital city, the famine was terrible. In a city, it would be even worse because in the farms, maybe they have things to eat on the farms. Maybe there are not as many mouths to feed. In the city, where you have lots of people, there's not enough food to go around. It's really awful. Verse 3, V'yikra Achav El Avadya. Now we're going to learn about another person who is his name was Avadya, or Avadyahu, he actually has a prophecy in one of the 12 prophets that we're going to learn about later. And our tradition has it that he was a convert, which is just interesting. That we believe that converts can be, you don't have to be Jewish born necessarily to be holy. In other words, any person can be holy or be great. And Avadya was one of the famous converts in our history. And he was a convert. He Asher al Habayis. He was in charge of the house. Now the house means the palace. He was the king, the head of the cabinet, so to speak. He was in charge, one of the leading ministers of the government of Achav. Now, typically, if you were a minister for Achav, you would assume that just like Achav was bad, you were bad. But over here it says the following: Va'avadyahu Hayoreis Hashem Ma'od. He feared God a lot. So the commentators all jump on this. Our forefathers, by Abraham, it says he feared Hashem. It doesn't say me'od. Mm-hmm. It says, by the Akedah, where the binding of Yitzchak, it says, now I know, ki yirei, because you fear Hashem. But over here it says, not only did he fear Hashem, but he fears Hashem very much. He translates that as greatly. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good if he gets more praise than Abraham, our father. He's one of the great people that fears Hashem very much. He's similar to Abraham in that just like Abraham was surrounded by idol worshippers and people that weren't good, Abraham Avinu managed to serve Hashem. So too, Avadyahu was surrounded by Achav and Jezebel and Izebel, and he managed to be very good. And that's not easy. It's one thing to serve Hashem when everybody around you serves Hashem. It's much more difficult when people around you don't serve Hashem. In other words, that's very unique and special when a person manages to do the right things when he's not surrounded by others. And so Avadyahu was able to do that. They asked this question, why would Achav, if he was an idol worshipper, why would he choose Avadyahu to be in his cabinet? Why would he want? So some people say that he believed it would bring him good luck. In other words, he knew that Hashem was angry with him. And so this way he had one person on his cabinet who was, a good boy, was like was very pious, and he thought this would bring him mazel, so to speak. Verse 4, V'hi v'hikris Izebel es nevi Hashem. Now we learn about something. It's not so well known, but Izebel made a campaign to wipe out the prophets of Hashem. Mm-hmm. That was his originally non-Jewish wife, Jezebel or Jezebel. We all knew the reason why we call like a very bad woman a Jezebel was because she was very bad. We're going to see. I mean, she was, and so she became the prototype for somebody. It could be that her husband, had he not had her, would have been okay. But she put him up to all kinds of bad things. But one of the things she did is she didn't want any prophets telling her they were doing wrong. So if you don't like the message, so you kill the messenger. And so she killed the prophets, those that served Hashem. Vayikach Ovadyahu, and Ovadyahu, who was one of the ministers for her husband, he took 100 of these prophets, Mea Neviim, V'yachveim Hamishim Ish Bemara, and he put them in different caves, and he provided for them. Kilkulam lechem u'mayim. He brought them bread and water. Now, it's hard enough to take care of people in regular times, but in the times of famine, to support 100 people would be very difficult. And they asked this question, wouldn't you think the king would find out about this? Kings always have very good spy networks, and if the queen puts on the most wanted list all the prophets of Hashem, why didn't they find out that Ovadyahu was hiding these people? So the tradition that we have is that people didn't speak Lashon Hara, that they didn't tell on him. And that's the reason why Hashem had a lot of patience with the people, even though they worshipped idols, but they didn't tell on each other. We find later that when David HaMelech was hiding from Shaul, there were people who went and told Shaul where he was hiding, and they always had trouble from the Plishtim. And we have an idea that if people are careful in Lashon Hara, then Hashem, there's certain habits that are just and so over here he was able to hide these 100 prophets and nobody told on him, or you could learn that he was very capable. It's hard to imagine hiding 100 people in a time of famine and getting away with it. Okay, verse 5 mentions he brought them food and water when there was no rain. And you're in the Middle East, water itself would be hard to bring to people, like to getting them water. Verse 5, Yomer Achav Ovadyahu Lech Be'eretz. Now Achav tells to Ovadyahu, go out throughout the land, El Kol Mayne Hamayim, to the places where the water used to flow, Kol Nechalim, to the rivers, Uvay Nimsa Chatsir V'nichya Susu Peretz. Since it was a famine and there was no rain, there was not enough plant vegetation to feed the animals, and so the animals were dying out. And every king in those times needed had horses and had animals that carried their things for their armies. And so he said, we have a major disaster here. They need to find, maybe near some of the former bodies of water, they would find some foliage to feed the animals. Below Nicholas Minibahema, that this way they should at least have some animals that would be still alive. That gives you an idea of how bad the famine was if the animals were beginning to die. Verse 6. And not only, some people say this was strange, that the king himself went to look. It says that they divided up. Here, you look on this part and I'll look on that part. So you could say it was so important, their mission, to find that the king himself got involved. Other people say the king didn't trust everyone to, the famine was so bad that if they found some water or vegetation, they were afraid that people would take it for themselves. So therefore the king only trusted Ovadyahu and himself to go on this campaign. Achav went one way, they came to a certain place, and one went this way, and one went that way. 7. Which again, it sounds unusual for a king to have only one man with him, but this apparently they couldn't trust, you know, people would take care of their private animals first. And Ovadyahu is looking for the plants, and who appears to him? Eliyahu, Be'akirehu, and he recognizes him. It's been a few years since he'd seen him. We don't know what their relationship is. In fact, Ovadyahu doesn't, we're going to see in a second, he seems to need to tell Eliyahu who he is. So, if Eliyahu was a leader or a great person, it's very possible he didn't know all the people that came to him, or necessarily. So he sees Eliyahu and he falls on his face. V'yomer, Atozeh Adonai, he said, is that you, my master, Eliyahu? Verse 8, V'yomer lo ani, that's me. And he gives them the announcement. He says, Leif, do me a favor. He says, please go. Amar l'Adonecha, go tell your boss, Hinei Eliyahu. Behold, Eliyahu is here. This is Elijah, you know, like he's very modest and very simple. He just says, oh, go tell him Eliyahu's here. You know, like, behold, Hinei Eliyahu. It's like very simple, very plain. He said, I'm here. V'yomer. Now, it's very interesting, this response. So Avadio is the minister, he's a righteous person, and Eliyahu comes to him, and Eliyahu says, oh, go tell the king that I'm here. Vayomar machatasi. So he says to him, how have I sinned? Ki ata nosin esavdecha bi'ad achav lahamiseni. If I'm going to announce to the king that I found you, he's going to kill me. Why? Verse 10. Chai Hashem Elokecha. Chai means by the life, means that he swears. Since the famine had been caused by Elijah, so he was on the most wanted list, and the king wanted to find Elijah to get him to take the curse off. So it's, he says that you should know, Elijah, you probably don't know this, but he swore that the king had sent spies or people to all the countries to search for him, the Omer Ayin, and nobody could find him. And he made all the people swear that nobody was hiding Eliyahu and nobody knew where he was. That's a good kilo yim sena, because you couldn't be found. Verse 11. Ata Omer Lech Emor Ladenecha. And if I go and say to my master Hinei Eliyahu, I'm going to tell him. Now he says an interesting thing. Verse 12. Vahaya ani elech miitach. I'm going to disappear from you. But Ruach Hashem Yisocha Ala Shelo Yeda. Eliyahu was mysterious even in those times. He says, like, you're here, I'm going to go tell the king I found you, and then we're going to come back and you're going to fly away. That's what he says, you're going to fly away like a wind will carry you away. And when I come to get you, we won't find you, but again, he'll kill me. It's kind of, he thought that this would get him in a lot of trouble, because the king had been searching for Eliyahu a long time, and he would say, I spotted him, and then they'd go back, and Eliyahu, it seems like he would appear, and keep in mind that Jezebel had made it illegal to be a prophet of Hashem, and so if you would stay in any place very long, she would have you assassinated. So probably he came and went and didn't stay very long. And so the Avadia was saying, like, I'm afraid, though, if you're going to disappear and I tell the king I found you, he's going to assassinate me. He's going to have me killed. The interesting thing is that he says that the Achav went to all the different kingdoms and searched out for Eliyahu and made them promise that they weren't hiding him. So they ask this, they point out that, why would any country, especially the countries that didn't like us, why would they wouldn't hesitate to hide Eliyahu? Like, if Eliyahu needed, just like when Shaul was searching for David HaMelech, David HaMelech ran away to the Plishtim. So, he seems to wonder that, they point out from here that the 10 tribes were doing so well that they had good, all the countries around them would not have considered hiding somebody who was on their most wanted list. Because that's basically what he's saying, is that we went to all the countries and we got a commitment from them that they wouldn't hide you. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, if you're going to appear now, and the king's going to think I'm making this up. Therefore, that was his question. He seems to want to tell Eliyahu that he fears Hashem. Why should Eliyahu care if this minister would get killed? So he's trying to explain to Eliyahu, you should know, I fear Hashem. Now he explains why. Verse 13. Belohu geladoni eseshisi. And you must know what happened. Baharu gizevel es nevi Hashem. That Jezebel, killed all the prophets of Hashem. Va'achbi menavi Hashem me'eish. I've hidden from the prophets of Hashem 100 people. Chamishim chamishim, 50-50. In the cave. Achalchem lachum mayim. Now why does he hide them 50-50? Why doesn't he put all 100 in the same cave? So they point out this was the strategy of Yaakov Avinu, that when Esav was coming to kill us, he divided into two camps. And this has always been the important strategy. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. That's always been a, in other words, and so even Avadio was trying to say, like, even with the prophets, I divided them up. Verse 14. And if I say, you're telling me, I should tell my master, he'll kill me. So he was saying that maybe Eliyahu, you should go to him yourself. He didn't want to be he was afraid to tell Achav that I found Eliyahu, because maybe Eliyahu wouldn't be there, maybe Achav would suspect him of something. He just felt this was a very dangerous thing. And Eliyahu hears this, verse 15. V'omar Eliyahu. And Eliyahu says, Chai Hashem Svot Shemati Lefanav. He says, by the life of Hashem, that I have stood in front of him. Ki hayom erei lav, that don't worry, I'll appear to the king. I'm not disappearing on you. You can trust me. I'm not going anywhere. This was the interesting expression is that when he says that he was in front of Hashem, he said he stood in front of him. What does that mean? Amadati lefanav. So the word for the amida usually means prayer. So he says that I have prayed in front of Hashem. In other words, Eliyahu was known for his prayer. In other words, by the life of... You could also say it means he served Hashem. But he said, by the life of Hashem, I'm going to appear to Eliyahu. Okay, 16. Vayelech Avadyo Likras Achav. And so Avadyo went to greet Achav Yagidlo, and he told him, Vayelech Achav Likras Eliyahu. So now Achav came to Eliyahu. Now you can imagine, here Eliyahu had said that if you don't give up idol worship, Hashem will bring a famine, and there'll be no rain, that maybe Achav now would apologize and say, we're sorry, you know, we'll do teshuvah, and no such luck. Achav has a very funny way of looking at this. This is relatively common when people are doing something wrong and you try to tell them, they get angry at you for telling them. It's like if somebody's drinking too much and you say, well, maybe you shouldn't have another drink, you know, and they say, who are you to tell me I shouldn't have another drink, you know, like they get upset at the one who's delivering the message. So here also, like here Eliyahu is coming to Achav, and let's see what Achav's response is in verse 17. He karos Achav es Eliyahu, when Achav sees Eliyahu, but Yom Ra'achav Eilav, Ato Zeh Uko Yisrael. Oh, here, you're the troublemaker. He's blaming, you know, here Eliyahu, he says, you're the one who's causing all the trouble here. It's all your fault. And so it's so interesting how we tend to be that way. In other words, we blame the messenger instead of looking at the... you know, the purpose of this. You would have thought that, you know, that maybe he would have thought about it. Maybe it's not a good idea to worship idols. Maybe it's not a good idea to kill out all the prophets of Hashem. Achav just didn't even think that way. Here he sees Eliyahu. He says, you're the one who's causing all the trouble. Verse 18, V'yomar, Achav says, Lo akartius Yisrael. He says, it's not me, Kim Ato, it's you. Ubeis Avicha, and the house of your fathers. What did you do wrong? Bezav v'chem es mitzvos Hashem. You have rejected the mitzvahs of Hashem. You have abandoned the Jewish faith. The Telech Achrei Habalim, and you've gone after the idols. So Eliyahu says, you got the problem all wrong. You think that I'm the source of your problem. The real source of the problem is something else. 19. Ba'ata Shalach Kibbutz. Now Eliyahu tells him, I want you to do the following. And now Shalach Kibbutz Elias Kol Yisrael. I want you to make a gathering of all the Jewish people. I want you to make an announcement that everybody should come El Har Carmel, to Mount Carmel, that's Nevi HaBaal, and I want you to even invite the prophets of the idols. Arba Meos V'Chamishim, there was 450 Nevi Asherah, Arba Meos, and 400 Okhle Shulchan Izevel. Not only did they have these prophets, the priests that worship the idols, they actually were provided for by, there were 400, Jezebel was feeding 400 of them. She was so into idolatry. And we mention this often. People, they tend to forget what idolatry was. The Americans basically massacred the Indians, and the reason that they saw them as savages was because they were idol worshippers. Idolatry meant human sacrifice. It meant orgies. It meant the worst of civilization. If you really read, we tend to think of the Indians, you know, with a cow, what's the big deal? They want to bow down. They don't want to. But the societies that practiced idol worship and included the worst of all things that were done. Izevel, his wife, had supported all these idols. And so Eliyahu sets up the showdown. He says, I want you to call everybody together. Let's have this out, so to speak. You know, you're representing your way of life. You feel that's proper for the Jewish people. I'm going to represent Hashem. Now, apparently, even though Achav was angry with Eliyahu, when Eliyahu spoke, people listened. You know, when you saw him, we're going to see Achav had his moments. He wasn't, it could be that when he wasn't around the queen, when he wasn't around Jezebel, that he was a good person, or he had the potential to be a good person. So verse 20, V'yishlach Achav b'kol b'nei Yisrael. So Achav says, okay, you got a deal. And he sends out to all the b'nei Yisrael, v'kvot esenavim el har Carmel. And he says everybody should come to Mount Carmel. We're going to set up for the major chance to once and for all decide who's correct. 21. Now, we often, you know, a lot of people tell you, you know, I would believe in Hashem if only he would make me a miracle, if only he would show me a sign. And what's going to happen here is one of the major miracles is about to happen. And what we're going to see, and we really saw this with the 10 plagues and the splitting of the sea, you would imagine after the 10 plagues, the splitting of the sea, the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, that that would be enough miracles. Like, we had enough miracles, and yet we find in the desert, the people still rebelled. And the basic idea is that miracles don't help. They're nice. You know, you see a miracle, you say, wow, you know, and people are that way. In other words, it's like, what have you done for me lately? We don't stay the same. We don't remember. While the miracle is happening, everything's great, we're going to be good, we're going to be fine, and then you go to sleep, and the next morning it's totally different day, totally. You have to accept that about people, that we experience this, you know, time changes people. They don't remember, they don't feel the same way, and it's kind of naive for us to say, well, if God would make a miracle, that's it. I'd make up my mind, and I wouldn't, you know, some of us, well, I'm not really sure, you know, I hear all this stuff, I don't know. If only I'd have a miracle, then my whole life would be, statistically, it's not like that. And that's one of the reasons why Hashem doesn't do that. In other words, if Hashem would give everybody one miracle, right?
He'd
be pretty busy, but it wouldn't change things, because that would work for a day or two, or a month or two, and many people, even today, experience miracles, it doesn't, you know, they're impressed with it, but people, the nature of people are, it's like, what have you done for me lately? I need another miracle, or I need another, from time to time, Hashem does things that are amazing. Many people feel that the state of Israel is an unbelievable miracle, like the... you see today, you know, Israel is surrounded by so many enemies, the fact that, and it got off the ground after the Holocaust, when we was probably our weakest point in history, probably our weakest point in any time, where we had the least pull and the least protection and the least wealth, where we were like a wounded people. We were the people that rebuilt the land of Israel. Were people that were scarred and wounded and just, you know, picking themselves up from the worst time in our history, and they were coming to a place of desert and disease, and it's such a miracle, and we all know it. I'm talking to the, you know, we're preaching to the crowd, so to speak, but even though we know it, we forget it's a miracle. There were many people that said that the fact that so many Jews were able to leave the former Soviet Union after all those years of communism. An open miracle. That Jews have been brought from the four corners of the world to Israel. There's so many things that happen in life that are just amazing. We go to sleep the next day, we wake up, we remember, we don't remember, we give thanks, we don't give thanks. Maybe there's at one point in our life we were very excited about it, but... you know, that's just the nature of being a human, is that we, every day is a different day. You know, yesterday was a miracle. Or somebody did me a favor, that was yesterday. What did you do for me today? Or I don't remember what they did. Or in other words, we have a short memory. I would say that. In other words, every day is a new day. And so it could be there was someone who, you know, was very good to us for a long time. And all of a sudden we don't remember anymore. or it doesn't mean anything to us. What have you done for me lately, or what have you expressed lately, or what? That's just the human nature. And so our goal is to reinvigorate ourselves, to remind ourselves of things. We have to remember the people that were good to us and did things for us and the miracles. And so over here, Elio, though, wants to set a miracle because this new kingdom had been set up, and it quickly fell into idolatry. And it was worth a try to try to save the kingdom, to try to pull people back to the service of Hashem. So Elio sets up this major experience. It's almost a unique kind of thing. We don't have too many of these big powwows, you know, in history. And he calls all the people together to Mount Carmel, and 21. And what's interesting is you have these 450 prophets, and you have all the king and the queen and all their people, and Eliyahu is just one person. He takes on the whole world by himself, because the prophets of Hashem were all in hiding. Vayigash Eliyahu kol ha'am. Eliyahu comes near to all the people. So we're going to see also, he wasn't a youngster. He was the Yomar. And he says the following. Anmaste'atem poskim al shnei sifim. He says to the people like this, how long are you going to walk on, go in between one and another? In other words, the people were, so one day they would serve Hashem, and then one day they would serve the idol. They couldn't make up their mind. So he says to the people, how long are you going to be inconsistent? If you believe that Hashem is your God, so then go all the way. Don't hold back. Now he says a very interesting thing. He says, if you really believe in the Baal, L'chu achrav. He said, "There's free will. Do you want to go after him? Go after him." And nobody could respond. Sometimes people, they want to have it both ways. That, yeah, they go to shul, they cover their bases, you know, they go on Yom Kippur, whatever, they give a little tzedakah, but then they do other stuff they shouldn't do, and they kind of balance them out. It depends on the day. One day they're good, one day they're bad. He says to them, "You got to make choices. You have to decide. You can't be so." Change your mind all the time. One day for Hashem, one day for the Baal. Choose, make a decision. What is it? And you might say, well, how can he tell people to worship the Baal? Well, if people really believe in the Baal, he knew that eventually they would see it was false and they would come back. But what he was saying to them is, but be real about it. Don't just play, you know, pay lip service. Make up your mind. And even if you decide to go worship the Baal, he wasn't afraid of that. He knew that people would then realize the Baal was nothing. But as long as the people would do it both ways, there was never a clarity. Because they, one day here, one day there, they just, they were too divided. Verse 22. V'yomer le'olam. So he makes an announcement to the people. He says, Anina sarti navi l'Hashem levadi. He says, it's only me. I'm the only prophet left in the 10 tribes. Navi HaBaal and the prophets of the Baal, Arba Meis HaChamishim. You got 450 guys on the other side. So let's have it out. And we're going to end here, right in the middle, and find out before we get to the action on verse 23. But he sets the stage to hopefully convince the people that Hashem is the one. And we talk about this in different points in history, what he accomplished. And it's an interesting episode. But that's how we see Eliyahu is coming to try to bring us back to Hashem.
Great.